Downloads of this show are available on Podomatic.com and the Podomatic mobile app.
I am Velocity Child, and every Friday at the stroke of midnight, ride the broomstick with Fallen Woman, a weekly psychic fusion of forward thoughts, far-out ideas, magical foray, and spellbinding song. Stirring up the cauldron at Radio Free Brooklyn.
The main struggle that people have with creativity is that they stop themselves from doing what comes naturally. And in a culture such as ours, where the simple is often suspect and the rustic is looked upon as not sophisticated enough, where things that are lively are downplayed so as not to be perhaps too curative or astonishing. And too often our deepest knowings about how to construct our own creative life, how to follow the impulses and the broadcasts that we feel from deep inside of ourselves, all of these have been replaced by manuals on how to do things, how to be things, how to find things, how to have sex, how to organize a household. There are books about how to be proper, how to avoid probate, how to find a mate, and so on. And though those may be useful, particularly for people who are unmothered and unfathered, many of those books pretend that the human being cannot invent the brightest, the most efficient, the most fascinating, elucidating, exclamating, uvulating things from their own minds and heart, and that whatever originates with oneself might, because you pitiful you, because you have made it yourself and it comes from your vitals, from your inspiratories, from your arteries, from your flesh and bone, therefore it may be inferior, somehow pathetic, or stupid, or insipid, vacuous. So many people think it would be a good idea to read books and to attend classes on how to be creative. And I would say that while these may be helpful sometimes and in some cases and for some reasons, the truth of the matter is that all you have to do to create is to stand out of the way. There is, deep at the center of the psyche, la chispa. La chispa is an ember that, even in wood that is half burnt, with only a tiny ember left in it, la chispa, the ember, can be fanned back into a blaze with the very smallest breath blown upon it. And there are many ways to visualize this element that lies at the center of consciousness. But suffice it to say that it has been there since the time that we were born, has been there since the time that we were children, as something that, consciously or not, we nurtured and developed as we grew along, no matter what the difficulties were in our lives. In Mexico, there's the idea in curanderismo of the double, the hidden one, the one who, no matter what happens to the outer one, the other, the double, the hidden one, remains pristine and untouched. Here's a poem called The Double. The man's double, the hidden one, squats in a solar cave with the moon at his feet, and all week long he has looked for the right child, the right light, the right question that will allow him to cross the bridge between daylight and night. This poem speaks about the creative function, the bridge that stands between the inner mind and the world, and the conveyances and bounties that cross back and forth over that bridge are what constitute creativity. And one more image. At the center of the psyche, what we're speaking of is a mystical substance that in Spanish is called el duende, the creative function. It is the of life, the animating engine, the creating mind, the quixotic, eccentric, many-cornered self with a capital S. And it's more than animation. It's a way of living that is following all the shapes and the curves of the lay of the land of your psyche. It juts out in just the right place to help or to protect or to sharpen vision. El duende is behind the instinctual nature, behind the self. It is the breath of the self, the oxygenating system that supports creative life. When the leaves of the trees shake, people say, ah, el duende. This unseen force can fill people with God. It fill people with fierce words that can cut to the bone or cut to the center of the issue, or can fill them with words that can heal or fly like a shaman's drum. This is the center of the psyche. It cannot be extracted or taken out like a loaf of bread, nor can it be put in as one puts food into one's mouth. It is a being. It comes to roost or to visit those who make a place for it, and some of us are born with the gift of it, and others of us must chase it everywhere. Yet, if you attempt to tie it down, it will wither. And if you set a trap for it, it will evade you. And if you use it without replenishing it, it will retreat. And if you think it costs nothing to have it, all your hair will be burned off. It's like a wild garden that still needs the tending of nature, the pruning and the fallowness to grow. It's a natural ecology, a way of being. Duende provides the central cycle of our creative natures. And that cycle is this, one of quickening, birth, rising in energy to a zenith, and then entropy, decline, and death. Ah, but it doesn't stop there. Then incubation. Again, quickening, birth, a rising of energy to a zenith, and the beginning of entropy and decline, and then again a death, and then another incubation. And it's this cycle that, unmolested at the center of the psyche, accounts for the creative acts and works that we put out into the world, whether they are acts of creating children, raising children, or they are acts that are done with the painter's tools, or in the sculpture studio, or at the writing desk. This cycle of creation, of rising and falling energy, is as it should be. In this sense, there is no such thing as creative block or writer's block. There is a time when creative energy flows like a river underground and disappears for a time. In the meantime, making something, creating a new body, and then emerging again. However, there are times when this natural cycle of creation and decline and creation again is interfered with by something that has occurred in a person's upbringing or a person's adult life. Something traumatizing, which has twisted the cycle so that it does not work in the right way, so that things stay underground and never emerge from the underworld into the topside world. One of my favorite cartoons shows a picture of a woman in her kitchen, and she has a rag around her head. She has a house coat on, and she has slippers on. And on high and low chairs and kitchen stools in front of her are a blender, a vacuum cleaner, a toaster, and a can opener. And she has a sheaf of papers in her hands. And the caption of the cartoon is, Mrs. McGillicuddy reads her poetry to her Monday morning poetry group. I find the cartoon poignant in so many ways because so many people labor in their creative life in isolation. And even more so, many people labor in their creative life with nothing forthcoming because there is some wound that has been sustained that prevents output. So I would like to talk to you about an old story, an ancient story that demonstrates how blocked creativity can be the result of trauma. And later, I would tell you another version of the same story that shows how creativity might actually be enriched by having a natural entropy and decline so that an incubation of new life can occur. But this story is the story of Demeter and Persephone. Now, there are two versions. One, the pre-Hellenic version, is the oldest, and it is about Persephone hearing a call and descending into the underworld. The newer version, which is post-Hellenic, is about Persephone being abducted into the underworld against her will. And even though this story, the latter, represents a time in the culture, in the Greek culture, when the monotheistic religious nations were overcoming the older goddess-oriented religions, this version of the story of Persephone being abducted is very valuable because I think it clearly shows how people have suffered by being taken away, abducted away from their own creative spirit. And I think that the story also shows a potential solution to the problem. So because the culture we live in too often omits or very weakly supports individual creative life and impulse, the abduction of creativity from the center of a person, thereby teaching them to dismiss or give short shrift to their creative natures, is an ongoing issue. In the story, Demeter is the Earth Mother in Greek mythos. She is tall and wide of shoulder and hip. She's bountiful. Her breasts are always filled with milk. Some say a river of stars from the Milky Way flows through her. Demeter is the mother of both the present and of the future. And as such, she has dominion over the bodies of future everything and anything. Children, fields, creatures, what lies under the ground, in las semillas, in the seeds, what grows above ground as well. She is, therefore, pregnant almost constantly. And the children she has delivered are many and beautiful. And the world is in an idyllic state because Demeter is rich in her fertility. And she is rich in her potential for future children, future fields, future endeavors. So Demeter is the mother of the creative potential that will come to fruition. And because of her nurturing, all things will come to fruition. This is Demeter's work, and this is her gift, the work of nurturing what is yet to become, what is yet to be, what is in the process of becoming a something out of a nothing. Now, Demeter has a daughter named Persephone who is young and naive, you might say unseasoned, and she is a teenager. And she is the light of her mother's eyes. and Persephone spends all of her time playing. That's her job. Persephone plays. And that, of course, is the central part of what creativity is concerned with. It is not only fertility. It is not only bringing potential into the world. It is not only nurturing, but also it is gaming and chancing and back and forth and up and down and the hop and the skip and the crawl and the jump and the leap of playing and wandering and roving and seeing what there is to see and coming across things that have never been thought before. So creativity both requires and causes various kinds of play. And being able to play without a goal, and being able to play aimlessly, as Persephone plays, is very important to creativity, for one discovers all manner of useful things on their way to nowhere in particular. Einstein said that if you are interested in finding the parameters of a thing, how it behaves, what its potential is, how it respirates, releases energy, and so on, that you may have to forfeit worrying so much about its location in space and time. And likewise, the person who is creating must initially, and perhaps for quite some time to come, worry less about what they will do with the object once it is created or completed. In other words, worry less about who will see it, who will find it, who will utilize it, judge it, and so on. But instead, allow themselves to be driven by faith that following one's arm or one's thought, one's inner dictation and instruction alone will give all the momentum and all the guidance and all the intensity and all the sense that the project requires to be gracious, useful, complete, and whatever other blessing the artist flows over their creation. So aimless play is a creative science, an inquiry with its own cartographer. It's a trailblazer. It's a great experiment in observing what can happen if there is no anxiety to reach the destination, but rather through seeing what happens. What will happen next? And to find one's way. So to see where it goes and to see what occurs next and to see what great or small thought will seize you or clasp you, what idea will embrace you or shake you or sometimes ambush you and take you somewhere heretofore unknown, that is the goal. To do this establishes the mood of the creative state, wherein one blurs one's focus in order to go deeper or leave behind the rational focused idea and enter the creative state. And these are all of a piece with one another. If the truth be known, the creative state is very much like a drug state, except that it is a mind drug, it is a brain drug, it is a soul medicine. I always remember Salvador Dali saying, I don't need drugs. I am drugs. By letting play lead, this produces an altered state. That impulse not to follow rules or lines, to go wherever it wants to take you. Then you create, not out of your rational mind alone. This is the center. This is El Duende. This is La Chispa. This is the union of altered state and pragmatic thoughts that makes creative work truly live. It is always a combination of the pragmatic and the soulful. This is what not only makes a building stand up, but makes it a place where people want to gather. This is not only what makes a poem that wants to be read, that makes forms and places and images, but makes words that are sharpened, that can penetrate past the ego and into the soul. So Persephone in our story, is playing one day, and she's swirling and whirling in a meadow that's bowered and flower-filled, and suddenly the earth cracks open, and a great black zigzag races across the land, and Hades, the dark god of the underworld, charges up out of the fiery abyss in his black chariot, drawn by 6 fire-breathing black stallions, and he seizes Persephone by her slender waist and throws her into the chariot and her skirts and sandals flying, and he drives his steeds back down into the earth and the dark horses, all muscle and sweat. Take them down, down, and the earth, as it once yawned open, now clamps shut, and Persephone has disappeared without a trace. Now, this is a true problem that almost all artists face, whether we're talking about artistry in song or dance, theater, design, painting, sculpture, writing, architecture, or whether we're talking about creativity through the eye of a reconstructive surgeon or through the eye of a designer of automobiles or through the eyes and hands of a person creating their life just this morning. Their life at hand. All creative life, whatever it might be. Designing the way you're going to put your chair in the living room, facing the window or not facing it, or whether you will plant those crispy bulbs in the springtime. So, this problem is about the development of obstacles to the free flow of creative force. And of course, we're called upon to do the hard work of seeking those out and overcoming them, of repairing those disruptions. The central issue in the story and in creative life is that suddenly, playfulness disappears, leaving not a trace, and everyone is puzzled. I just don't know what happened. It just went away. It evaporated. I was dancing my ideas. I was whirling and twirling with them. I felt hot and excited, but now I feel cold and somehow absent from myself. Or, I feel under pressure after that last mile to fantastic success, and now I feel inhibited, thin, scraggly, idealess, irritable. Or, I can't seem to begin. I am empty. I haven't even the most meager of ideas or impulses. And so we see Hades has come and gone here. The fact of the matter is that something from the underworld, in other words, something from the unconscious, has come and snatched away the playfulness that is essential to creative life. Something has surfaced and seized our wonderful ambling direction, that meandering that leads to creative soul and spirit. It's gone. And we are, against our wills, uncertain now and silent, and everything has stopped. Nothing sways. No leaves shake, no flowers, no petals fall, no seeds are shaken loose. A complete hush comes over the land. In the post-Hellenic Greek myth, Demeter discovers that her daughter is missing and has severe and desperate reactions. She, like we, when we lose our lovely creative impulses, is beside herself. She becomes infertile. She becomes what the old classical Freudians might call frigid, unable to respond to ideas of new life. She has lost emotion. She has no energy, no power, no passion. And like Demeter, we are without play, without fertility, without nurturance of ourselves, and without a sense of the future self. We are not very alive. And what is above the ground is wilted, or dry, or still. But what is below the ground? Wait. What is below the ground is the ever-youthful self, Persephone. So, since Demeter is separated from her beloved child, all the crops die. All the corn and all the wheat and all the flowers and all the trees die. The mountains die, the deserts die, and even the light dies, and no one and no thing can conceive. And the world is a wretched, horrible, barren place that reflects Demeter's barrenness and despair. Demeter is barren because she misses her daughter, but also She is barren because her daughter represents the side of human nature that is invested with potential and whose playing makes discovery of new things and new ways possible. So in this sense, Persephone, like first woman, a holy being at the center of many creation tales throughout the world, first woman, such as in the Nahua or Inuit stories, is the first woman on earth who is a creator goddess, who comes out of the void and begins to create and differentiate matter. And like first woman, Persephone is the initiating or first creative impulse that we feel when we approach our longing to create or when a brilliant idea comes upon us. Persephone, as the first creative impulse we experience, you know, that flash of light or that shower of sparks that leaves behind a wonderful idea in our consciousness, that is Persephone. She is symbolic and demonstrative of the very first impulse to move us from idea to manifestation of that idea. And when she is abducted or absent, the creative world is darkened. For it is her skill in playing around with ideas, sounds, images, sensations that lies at the center of the creative force. Without her, the creative force cannot create. There's a saying in Spanish, libro cerrado no saca letrado. And though it's used colloquially to mean don't judge a book by its cover, it has a deeper meaning, and that is that a closed book cannot be read at all. It means that what is darkened is unavailable to us, causing us to be unknowing. It affects our perceptions and our future learning, and it leaves us without the light. So Demeter does not know what has happened, nor where her daughter has gone, and she begins a pressured search over and under and behind, seeking for Persephone. And she wanders over the land, holding torches into caves and lowering herself into wells and watching the open sea, searching for signs, anything that would show her the way in which she would find her daughter. She searches through the forests, looking for a thread on a twig, or stones overturned, wet side up, anything that would tell her her beloved child has passed this way. And those of you who have been intensely creative, intensely involved in a project, and suddenly come to a standstill in that project, and you cannot understand for the life of you what has happened, or where your creative juice has gone, you are then like Demeter. Some part of you has fallen away. Something from the unconscious has erupted and taken away a truly essential part of yourself, and you do not know where it is, and you do not know how it occurred, and you do not know who took it, and you do not know where to look. And so you begin to wander about also. Many times, especially among people who are artists in one way or another and understand that there are many, many, many ways to be artists. One can be an artist in creation of family, creation of work life, creation of a life worth remembering among people who are living artfully. Life is sometimes at its most creative. But this life can also come to a standstill. And take writers, for instance. Even though it is their full intention to get down to business, they may put it off by sharpening every pencil in the house 45 times, and then they decide they must go to the drugstore and buy a new blue notebook, no other color will do, even though they already have several. A fresh one will be better. And though sometimes this can be so, it is too often not so, but they charge down to the cubbyhole or out to the stair step or out into the park anyway to try to write, and they cannot write. And so then they decide that, no, if I just clean up my writing space in the house, then I'll feel better and writing will be easier. And so they clean up their writing space, making sure to go through every wilted love letter and every moldy receipt and grocery list since the beginning of time, until they've run out of time to write. So, that does not work either. And so then they go out and they buy a house plant and they think that if they bring some life into their studio, then they will be able to create again. And that doesn't work. And then they call a friend and they talk to the friend and they weep on the friend's shoulder and they hope that that will work. And that does not work. And then they go out to choose a house paint, for surely, if they paint that wall a certain shade of yellow, then they will be able to write better. And it's amazing what artists will do to quote-unquote get ready to make art. It is in this way that we all cover miles and miles of territory, looking for the starting line when it's right inside of our minds the entire time. So none of these traipsings and convolutions are exactly the point. They don't work to burgeon creation because the problem in this case is that what is lost inside the unconscious of the person themselves. Temporarily lost, yes, but inaccessible for right now or for a time. And what can be done? Well, let's see. You must do what Demeter does, and that is that you have to begin searching the land, the internal territory. Now you hold torches into the caves of your own psyche, looking for the part of yourself that has the ability to live without habitual direction. Even though you are feeling dry and barren, now you go on a journey. Even though it's a rough ride, even though it's painful, now it is the journey itself that has the juice that you have been seeking. It is the journey itself that is fertile, for whatever it is that you are seeking is also seeking you. Let's go along now and see what has become of Demeter. Ah. Next we find her sitting on a curbstone, and her hair is hanging in her face, and her clothes are soiled and coming unraveled at the hems and the seams, and her feet are blistered under her sandal straps, and her knees and elbows and shins are bloody and bruised, for she has been looking atop every mountain and behind every stone and under every ocean for Persephone, and thus far has found nothing. Yet, what is this? Here comes a little goddess by the name of Baobo, the ancient goddess of obscenity. A female obscenity in particular, obscenity meaning that which is outside accepted practice, outside the obvious. So here comes this little creature dancing toward Demeter, and Baobo is doing a lewd dance. She dances left and she dances right, and she lifts her skirts and shows her body to Demeter. And at first, Demeter sees without seeing. And Baobo is a very strange sight, because she has no head. And her eyes are her nipples, and her mouth is her vulva. But slowly, as Baobo's dance continues, Demeter raises her head and begins to watch, and then Baobo begins telling ribald jokes. And paradoxically, Demeter, even in her grief, begins to smile and then laugh. And as she laughs, a certain well of life flows back into her. Because laughter, very much like Persephone, is very unfocused. It is not directional. It is not dry logic. It happens at the oddest and most strange times, magical times often. And laughter is one of the best things a person can do to break a depression about their creativity. It loosens that depression. In the same way, the earth is loosened for the seed to come. It loosens the depression about not creating what, how, where, and for how long that you are assailing yourself about. The laughter allows a person to change moods, to cease dwelling upon the so-called stuck place, and to proceed. Laughter in these cases, laughing at yourself, laughing at the mess you've made, laughing at how you've been walking around, frightening yourself about your creative life, thinking that perhaps you're washed up, that there's nothing left, that before you made your fait accompli, your opus, you were tired out and used up, and it will never happen, it will never occur. The usefulness of laughter in these cases is because it has little to do with the ego. It has nothing to do with the projects you have in mind for now or later. It has nothing to do with focusing on the engineered or cognitive life or any of those matters. It has to do with pure emotion. Emotion that, like a flash flood in the desert, rushes out over a land that has been parched and peeling. And like that flood of water over the dry land, Baobo shows up and dances in Demeter's presence, dances over her dryness, loosens her soil, prepares her for the next stage, awakens her. And this is the essential transformation, because Demeter has laughed and well and deeply. All of a sudden, she's more alert, and her thinking is more clarified. And she does not have her daughter, but she begins to think that maybe there's something else she can do yet that she has not done before. And she does not know what, but she thinks maybe, just maybe, there's something else. Well, as it turns out in this version of the myth, the people of Greece appeal to Zeus. And Zeus is the chief god, sort of like the president in the terms of pantheon of gods. And they beg him, "You cannot let our land be so barren. We are dying. We're starving to death. What have you done with Persephone? You must restore her to Demeter, her mother, because we are all of us suffering the way Demeter suffers. And we are your people. Respond to us, Zeus." And as it turns out, which sometimes happens in the old crony clubs even today, Zeus has actually conspired with Hades, giving his blessing to Hades to steal Persephone. In fact, allowed him, given him permission. Zeus gave Hades his blessing to steal Persephone for reasons that are not detailed in the myth. However, his little side deal with Hades has in actuality caused the suffering of so many. It has disrupted the entire earth. And it has made everything stop. Nothing moves. Not the heart. Not the eye. Not the seed. Not the mind. And so Zeus thinks it over and finally comes to a decision. In part because the people of Greece have threatened not to worship him anymore. And he says, "Well, I think I had better reverse my decision." And so he calls down into the underworld and calls the name of Hades. Hades arrives in his dark chariot. And Zeus says to this dark god, "Hades, you're going to have to restore Persephone to her mother." And Hades, of course, does not want to do that because he has made Persephone his bride. She is now the queen of the underworld, and he's in love with her. And this is very much like Beauty and the Beast or Caliban. Hades is very mysterious and very dark and very lonely. And he lives down in a cold underworld, and he is profoundly longing for warmth. And of course, Persephone is warmth, personified in a generous creature of deep instinct and imagination. So Hades does not want to let Persephone go, even though she sits joylessly upon her throne in the underworld. Her cheeks are pale as snow, and she is frozen in time. The touch of the cold underworld god has taken her life from her as she had known it. And she refuses to eat or drink, and she will not make love or dance. And she yearns toward life in the topside world, that is, her mother's world, the goddess Demeter, who rules all nature, the goddess who loves the future of all things. And so Zeus sees Hades' forlorn face and strikes a deal again, saying, "Well, Hades, if Persephone has not eaten anything in the underworld, You must restore her to her mother forever. But if she has eaten anything in the underworld, then what we can do is say that she will have to stay in the underworld at least part of the time. So Hades, the dark god, in his melancholy, returned to the underworld, and he was beside himself. Now, to think of losing Persephone just as Demeter was once beside herself, for exactly the same reason. And as he cinches his dark horses to his chariot for the journey to the topside world, Hades connives to keep Persephone with him. He pulls down the chariot step for her, and he wraps her in the blankets of night. And as they rise through the strati of the underworld and the steam of the midworld and up through the dim light that becomes more and more bright, with his knife he sadly but determinedly cuts open a pomegranate and presses the brilliant red fruit into her mouth. And the red wine of the pomegranate runs from her lips down her throat and onto her white breasts. And though she refuses to eat the fruit, she swallows 6 seeds in the process. And so Zeus is able to proclaim that as a result of those 6 seeds swallowed, that Persephone will live with her mother 6 months out of the year, and that she will live with Hades the other 6 months of the year. This story is told pastorally to explain why there are seasons of the year and why winter comes. Winter is when Persephone returns to Hades and lives in the underworld, and that is why spring comes also, when Persephone is restored to her mother. It is said that each year when Persephone steps onto the land from Hades' dark chariot, that she runs toward her mother, and every step she takes causes green to stream across the land for as far as one can see in any direction. And that each step Demeter takes running toward her daughter leaves small flowers and a shower of seeds behind in her footprints. And once reunited, Persephone plays in the meadows and her mother is joyous, and as a result makes the land abundant and fertile again. The story of Demeter and Persephone could well be titled The Day Death Was Invented. In all mythologies, there is eternal and infinite life, one might even say mindless life, until death is introduced, in this case through Hades, as one of the main players, as a cycle or a wheel of events that occur. Then the cycle of life and renewal is complete. It is no longer mindless, for with loss, descent, and death, there comes consciousness. There can be no renewal without death, without entropy, without reduction and regression. So there is a very critical piece of information in this story for those of us who struggle with keeping creativity clear. And incidentally, in case you did not know, everyone who creates struggles to keep the flow clear. And every day, purification or hygiene is required in that respect. And if it is not done, then the flow becomes dammed, and there is a pathological condition that occurs mostly because people are barely taught how the creative life works, let alone how to care for its needs and requirements. But here, in the Demeter and Persephone story, we see that all creativity is a cycle, not a singular event with no past and no future, but a cycle that has that quickening and rising to a zenith and begins a decline and falls into a death and then an incubation, a holding or waiting period, and once again a quickening, and thence a rebirth. And this process continues over and over again, and it is this cycle that is right and proper and cohesive and sacred. Because there must be a time of decline and a time of utter stillness, creativity can never be paradisical. It can never be utopia, wherein it just flows and flows and flows with no maintenance, with no waiting periods. In everything manifest, there is vibrancy, then decline, followed by restoration. To create is a profound experience of the value of life. To create is to crave a certain kind of life that flows in that cycle, to understand it as deeply as possible and to be changed by it. Creative life is a spiritual practice, not lived at a distance, but lived right in the soup, right in the pot of boiling oil, right in the dark woods, right in the realm of Demeter, who is life, and Persephone, who is descent, and Hades, who is death, and Baobo, who is the quickening of new life. Even Zeus must submit to the grand round. All these figures portraying aspects of a single psyche, your psyche. All of them drive the creative life down into the dark, and all of them in tandem lift it back up into the light and into rebirth again.
This concludes session one of The Creative Fire, Myths and Stories on the Cycles of Creativity with Dr. Clarissa Pinkola Estes.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, the chocolate room. Hold your breath. Make a wish. Count to three.
Come with me, and you'll be in a world of pure imagination. Take a look, and you'll see into your imagination. We'll begin with a spin. Traveling in the world of my creation, what we'll see will defy explanation. If you want to view paradise, simply look around and view it. Anything you want to do it, want to change the world, there's nothing to it. No life I know to compare with pure imagination. Living there, you'll be free if you truly wish to be. If you want to view paradise, simply look around and view it. Anything you want to do it, want to change the world, there's nothing to it. I know to compare with pure imagination. Living there, you'll be free if you truly wish to be.
Oh, dear, dear. How queer everything is today. And yesterday, things went on just as usual. Let me think. Mr. Rabbit, have you seen Dinah, my cat? She was at the edge of this hole.
Talking backward, and the Red Queen. much like lemon drops high above the chimney top. That's where you find me, oh, somewhere over the rainbow. Bluebirds fly and the dream that you did to, oh why can't I, oh, someday I wish upon a star, wake up with the clouds are far behind. Be where trouble melts like a lemon drops high above the chimney top. That's where you find.
Velocity Child, and every Friday at the stroke of midnight, ride the broomstick with Fallen Woman, a weekly psychic fusion of forward thoughts, far out ideas, magical foray, and spellbinding song, stirring up the cauldron at Radio Free Brooklyn.